good morning, good afternoon, good evening to all of you. So today it's the sixth day of our coming together to practice the Dhamma online. And so have this sincerity of heart and have effort, and these are very important things. Because we have a faith already. We have belief and respect in the perfectly self-awakened Buddha, in the Dhamma, the Sangha. And this faith, it's a very meritorious and skillful thing. So when we say merit, this is a fullness of heart. Kusala, or skillfulness, this is an intelligence of heart. So maybe some of you have been to India before and have paid respects to the places where the Buddha cultivated his baramis, spiritual perfections, the places where he was, the place where he was born, he was awakened, gave the first teaching, and passed into total nibbana. So there's a faith there. There's a joy that comes up, a fullness of heart, and the samadhi can become firmly established. But some of you haven't had the chance to go. But if you recollect the Dhamma of the perfectly self-awakened Buddha and practice in line with that Dhamma, then your heart too can become full. There can be this joy, this happiness that arises. And it's like you're very close to the Buddha. And that's even more so if we gain a clear understanding into the Dhamma. And there's a really firm belief in the Buddha. Because we, and seeing that the Buddha is truly here, that the Buddha is in the Dhamma, then the heart becomes very bright as this firmly established, unshakable faith. And this is a noble wealth. So with regards to wealth, there's external wealth and there's internal wealth. And the external wealth is the material gains and the status, the praise, the pleasure that we receive. And that's outside. But what's inside is within our heart, and that is a noble wealth. This external wealth is something that can be destroyed by floods and fires and earthquakes and various disasters. But the internal wealth is that which is far away from enemies. So Aryapugalas, noble beings, they too are far away from enemies. And what are the enemies? Well, the enemies are the enemies of the heart, greed, hatred, and delusion, and these defilements. And these are what take us to spin around over and over again between birth and death. Sometimes being human, sometimes as an animal, sometimes going into hell, being a deva sometimes. If we get samadhi to the level of jhanas, then going to the Brahma world. But none of these last for long. They don't last forever. Because their arising depends upon the merit and the kusala, the skillfulness that we've created. So therefore we need to come to train our own minds to give them more intelligence. That we already have this respect towards the Buddha, the Dhamma, the Sangha. And we make offerings on a regular basis. We offer scents and flowers and candles. Then we also have a belief in his teachings. We come to practice those teachings. So generosity and virtue. But something that's a bit more difficult than that is our views. So changing the views in our mind. And when our minds cling to views, what that comes from is ignorance. So when we attach to the views, then that changes into delusion. And there's immediately a self that arises. So therefore we need to develop our mindfulness and be training our minds so that they have wisdom, knowing what's happening in time. We need to be observing and following up on our minds. For the ones who follow up and watch their minds, they are the ones who will be freed from Mara, which means freed from all suffering. And so we must come to do walking meditation, sitting meditation, trying to cultivate our mindfulness all throughout the day. And if our mindfulness is well developed, then we'll have peace. And we'll see that this body which is moving about, it's simply a body, but it's not me. And the mind may give orders to the brain then sends that to the nervous system. But if there's some problem there, then the mind can't have control over the body. But the reason that we suffer over that is because we take it to be me. I am the one that gets born, I get old, I get sick, and I die. And so the causes for suffering are appearing. So all throughout the day, whenever we meet with any sensation, we take all of that personally. And we need to be very careful here, especially in this present day, that we're so developed materially that we're able to know about so many different things. But when we know about that, it's all to do with me and mine. And so the causes for suffering are coming up constantly, creating great agitation and conflict in the mind. So when we cultivate samadhi, then that's a putting down of the sense of self. That we don't have that feeling because the samadhi is on top of it, or it's suppressing it. And it's quite hard for us to do this. So in training towards that, we need to just receive a little bit, so only listen to a little bit, need to just read a little bit. Because if we watch and read and listen to a lot of things, then it's very hard. So we just do what's necessary. That there may be some delight in these things, but we get that in a balanced way, kind of just enough, but we don't get drunk on these things. And especially in this present day that we all have so many things that we need to be doing. We have our family to take care of, we have our various duties and our work. But then if we also get delighted in the online world, then our minds will be really chaotic. And this stains our heart due to the greed, hatred, and delusion that appears and makes the mind chaotic. But for all of us, we have faith that there's around 100, 150 different groups or accounts that have joined us. And this is a really good opportunity that we have. And it shows that we have this bhārami, we have merit, that we're interested in this practice, interested in training our bodies and minds so that peace becomes firmly established and grows. And something that's really significant is doubt, that this is a huge obstacle in our practice. And for people who start off practicing, there'll be a lot of doubts there. And so they try to relieve this by seeking out knowledge. They listen to some things, but the doubts don't disappear. They read some things, and there's still doubting going on. So Ajahn Chah, he said, in order to put down these doubts, we need to practice. But when I heard that, I thought, well, if I don't doubt, then how am I going to know? If I don't doubt, then maybe I'll get lost. But we need to try to put these things down. So when we come to practice, then we try to just put everything down. And we are determined that in this life, I'm going to develop mindfulness to my utmost, be reciting Buddha, Dhammo, Sangho, whether standing, walking, sitting, lying down, to have a lot of mindfulness, to be thinking very little. Because when we think just a little bit, then the mind is at peace. And so some people wonder, well, why is it that I practice and my mind isn't calm? And it's because there are so many thoughts there creating chaos. So we need to try to bring up mindfulness a lot. We also need to find methods to do this, to bring the mind to peace. And so we can torture ourselves a bit. Just eat little, speak little, sleep little. So if we eat a lot, for example, then the mind will be very scattered. And so this happens to some monks. When they eat just in a normal way, then the mind is very restless going here and there. And they put the food into their mouth and chew it, the flavor comes up, then thoughts start coming up as well, and it's not still. So in that case, we need to torture. And so just eat rice, for example. And we can mix a little bit of milk in there as well. Maybe a small amount of food, just one ladle of other foods. But in doing this, the mind can become very still. If we eat a lot, there's a lot of flavor, for example, then the mind can be really chaotic. So you try to torture the mind a bit, so you'd be grating our hearts, going against their desires. And sometimes it really can be difficult, it can be suffering. There's one time that I got just one bowl of rice and one piece of dessert. And my friends around me were just eating normally and very comfortably. And I thought to myself, well, why am I going through so much torture? But when I was eating, the mind was in a very peaceful state. I can still remember the taste of that meal. And as I was eating, my tears were falling into the bowl and mixing with the food. I was thinking, I'm torturing, being tortured like this much. But there was stillness there. The mind was also in peace. So if we have a lot of energy, we can try walking a lot. And then when the body is tired, then the mind can settle into peace then. The thoughts get less and less. And it's easier like this. It's just like when monks go on these ascetic wandering, and they walk for long periods. But as they're walking, then with the left foot recite Bud, the right foot Do, and that's all they're thinking. Their mind isn't going off creating other stuff, and so it comes into peace. And when the mind is peaceful like this, then wisdom will arise, we'll be able to see clearly. The reason that we have problems is because of our doubts, that we practice and we doubt at the same time. But when peace comes up, then these doubts go. When the peace goes, then the doubts come up once more. And this is the nature of samadhi, to be like this. Because the doubts are obstructions to samadhi. So there are many different obstructions that can come up. Some people get very angry, for instance, and that's an obstruction to samadhi. Some people can feel intense lust, and that's also an obstruction. For some people, they get very drowsy. Whenever it is they come to sit in meditation, they fall asleep. And the samadhi is very difficult to develop in that case. There's also this scatteredness of mind as well. And then there's doubts. And these are the things that we need to be fighting against. And it's tough in the beginning. But when we do get samadhi, then there's an encouragement, enthusiasm that comes up. In the beginning, however, we need to endure, really endure, forbear a lot. If we want to cut off and reduce the numbers of existences and lives that we have left, then we need to create a very strong heart. It needs to have power, these palas, these spiritual powers. And so there's a faith that comes up, the strength through that faith. And then there's also the energy and the effort, the mindfulness. But as we're developing those, then we need to endure a lot too. And we need to try to seek out methods of training that are effective in bringing our minds to peace. So for lay people, you don't need to take it quite as strictly as the monks. You know, just practice in a way that's balanced, that's just right. But what's really important is to be reciting these meditation words, phrases, mantras a lot, to be contemplating a lot. So for some people, they contemplate death, and just death. In the morning, they wake up, they tell themselves life is not sure, but death is sure. And they tell themselves, I'm going to die this morning. And then later on, then they tell themselves, I'm going to die in the late morning. And then after that, I'll die before I start eating. They think about death a lot. And this can help to hold greed, hatred, and delusion at bay and keep the mind in a peaceful state. And Ajahn Chah said that if the defilements are very daring and strong and no other meditation method is working, then contemplate death. But then doubts can come up here as well. And think, well, if I contemplate death, will I be able to reach Magga, Pala, Nibbana, the paths, the fruitions, Nibbana through that? And this is just a doubt. But just do it for now, and then the mind will come into peace just by itself. And when the mind is peaceful already, then these phrases, words, they drop away. Because these meditation words, they're vitaka and vichara, so this initial and sustained application of the mind. But when there's further peace, then there's just piti, sukha, ekakata. So there's rapture and happiness and unity. And the samadhi is well established. And when it's like that, then a contentment appears. There's a great coolness to the heart. And when we see people walking around, then we don't see people. You see, it is just being this, that there's no being, there's no individual, no me, no you. And we really see things like that. But before that, we may wonder, well, if there's no being, no individual, no me, no you, then what is there? But when we see these conventions for what they are, then we see that it's just merely so, it's just how it is. And this is the arising of wisdom, seeing into the nature of conventions and experiencing vimutti, liberation, that the heart becomes free. And it's able to separate out from the aramanas, from its objects, seeing the mind as one thing, the objects as something else, they don't get mixed together. When we don't have mindfulness and samadhi, and then the objects and the mind are one thing, and everything is me, isn't it? But when there's a samadhi there, then it can separate out from those objects through samadhi. And then when wisdom comes up, then we see that these aramanas, objects, they're merely aramanas. The mind separates out from them, seeing that they're not self. So we see clearly here that it's just an object, that memory is merely memory, that thoughts are just that, they're just objects of the mind. The Vedana feelings are just objects of the mind. Perception and vijnana, sense consciousness, these are just objects of the mind. So when the eye perceives a form and there's a feeling of sight that appears, none of that's me, it's not me that sees. But if it's me that sees, then it's me that has problems. Because there's a me and a you that's appearing, showing that greed, hatred, and delusion has come up already. But if there's no self there, then we have let go. But we need to train in this. When the mind becomes more and more subtle, we'll better perceive anicca, dukkha, anatta, as inconstancy, stress, and not self. And then the mind becomes even more peaceful, can contemplate into the body in a way that allows us to see it more clearly. But we can also get lost when this happens. You think that my mind, my samadhi is really good, and if I just look at my mind, then I can attain to arahantship. And this is something that the defilements like to tell us, because we want to get results quickly. It's kind of like we want to get really rich, but we don't want to work. We just do a little bit, but we want to get a lot of results. And we see someone who's very wealthy, but we don't want to do what they did in order to get that wealth. So all dhammas have causes which bring them up, which make them arise. So therefore we must put in our efforts. So we must build our faith, build our effort, build mindfulness and samadhi and wisdom, this all-round knowing. And when we can do this, then we can remove all of the doubts. And we do that through our practice. So as we practice and we go on, and we see how there's just nothing there to doubt about. The doubts just don't arise. And before they came up very often, so many times throughout the space of just one day. But next we see it's easy. But it's actually not easy because the views of our heart are incorrect. So when training with an awakened teacher like Ajahn Chah, he'd tell us that to rid our hearts of doubts, we need to practice this way of sila, samadhi, and panya, virtue, collectedness, and wisdom. And then one day there will be a peace that arises in the mind, that both the body and the mind feel very light, and nibbana feels like it's really close by. But there can be this delusion that comes up as well. You think that, well, if I contemplate the body, then I'll attain to, contemplate the mind, then I'll attain to arahantship right here. So we need a great teacher then, a Kruba Ajahn, who's setting us straight at this point. So you may think that when the mind is peaceful like this, we just look at the mind. But what we need to do is to contemplate this body, because this is what we're deluded in. We think that this body is something that's beautiful. It's actually, it's not attractive. It's really anicca, dukkha, anatta, something unstable and stressful and not self. But we take it to be stable, a source of happiness and me. So therefore, we must separate out the elements of the body, as earth, water, fire, and air, separate them out until we see their emptiness. That there really isn't any self within it. So there's joy, there's samadhi, a stillness of heart that comes up here, and it's really incredible. And the more that we can see the body as unattractive, the more beautiful the mind becomes. It becomes bright and radiant. And so these are opposed to each other. If we see the body as being beautiful, then the heart becomes dark. The kilesas stain our hearts. They trick our hearts. They pull them down, make them darker and darker. But if we see the body as not beautiful, then the heart becomes clean and clear and radiant. There's a rapture and a fullness of heart that comes up. And so they say that beauty is in a corpse that a ghost has tossed aside, and goodness is in abandoning the attachments from our hearts. So we contemplate this body as being not beautiful, contemplating it as being a corpse that belongs to a ghost. And we try to see the truth in that. So it's just like a noble disciple of the Buddha who was born into a very wealthy family in Varanasi. But he could see the unattractive nature of the body through jhana, the first jhana that he created in a previous life. And so he saw the people around him, his followers, as unattractive, and he felt really weary with that situation. So he left his house and wandered into the forest where the Buddha was staying. And the Buddha saw him, and he called out, Yasa, come here. And here it's not chaotic. Here it's not disturbed. And a great joy, contentment, fullness came up within his heart that the Buddha called my own name. That he'd never met me before, but he knows my name. And so he really set his heart on listening to the teachings of the Buddha and reached stream entry, Sotapanna. So in our current day, this has also happened as well, that when Ajahn Chah went to stay with one of his teachers, Ajahn Tongrat, as he was walking into the monastery, Ajahn Tongrat called out to him, Chah, you've come already, have you? I've been waiting for you. And he knew his name, even though it was the first time that they had met. And so the perfectly self-awakened Buddha, he had these profound jhanas and a clear knowing. And so when it's like that, then there's this great faith that arose in Yasa towards the Buddha. And then he listened to his teachings further, contemplated, and attained to arahantship. And that was because the barami that he had already created in the past was to a very great degree. So that in that life, that very life, he was able to see and know the Dhamma. So for all of us here, practicing together, we've all created a lot in the past as well. And what we're doing in the present is creating more. And this then becomes the cause for results to arise in the future. Because this present moment, it's both the results of the past and the cause for the future as well. And when our barami reaches a ready state, then we'll see the Dhamma. And in the days left of this retreat, the sixth day, the seventh day, the eighth day, carry on practicing. It's possible that you'll get there, that this wisdom will come up, and that you can see that the mind is just a mind, the objects are just objects. But right from the time that we've been born, we've taken all of these to be me. And the mind has greed, hatred, and delusion, and takes those to be me. The mind without greed, hatred, and delusion, we don't come across that very often. But we take everything to be me. It's all a matter of self. But when a practitioner develops and they see that these are merely aramanas, merely objects, and they don't cling to any of them, that there's nothing there. And it's like that there's an object that weighs 5 kilograms, but if we don't lift it, then we don't feel that heaviness of 5 kilograms. It's only when we pick it up that it has weight to it. And so these objects of the mind are moods, sense impressions, they're the same. That when we attach to them, then they're heavy. And so therefore we need to bring about mindfulness, samadhi, and wisdom in this mind so that we don't attach. It's maga and pala, it's the past, the fruitions. They're not out of date, they haven't disappeared from this day and age. And so it's possible for us to get there in this life. Maybe this year, this month, this day. If we develop a clear understanding into the nature of material things, that they are unconstant, stressful, and not self. You see that this body is just composed of 4 elements. Then we will attain to the Dhamma and see the Dhamma. You know, this is something that's really amazing. But maybe we just get a little bit first. There's joy that comes up, there's contentment that comes up, and then the energy that we have to practice grows and grows. And we bring up this patience and endurance. And as we carry on doing that, then we have rapture, which nourishes our hearts. And the heart feels very vibrant and fresh. And so here we see the results of our practice have appeared to some degree. So therefore you shouldn't be discouraged. Really just take this practice on. Meditate a lot. Recite these meditation words a lot. Fight with these defilements. And one day you will win out over them. If not a lot, then a little. So may you all set your hearts on this, and may you all succeed in this practice.